I feel like I've lost control already. When a Medal of Honor winner walks in the room, everything stops. You just go, okay. But the good news is we have these gentlemen out here. I'm Ed McElhinney, by the way. I'll be moderating today. And I am honored, absolutely honored, to have the guests that we've got today. Connie's already kind of introduced them a little bit, but we've got Duke Cunningham here to my left, Willie Driscoll, and then we just got a MiG pilot down at the end, a guy named Randy Ball. So those are going to be the folks that we're going to talk to today. Thank you all for being here, and I always do this in my presentations. I'm going to first ask veterans, please, veterans, active, please stand up. We'd like to recognize you, say thank you for your service. And then I'm going to ask one more favor today, and it's a little bit different. I'm going to ask to see how many fighter pilots, how many military fighter pilots we have in the audience. Please stand up. We got, wow, wow. Again, thank you very much. And that's what I was also, and I got to say that... you know, these guys back then were my heroes. They continue to be my heroes. You know, take a look at the lettering out here. History, heroes, and heritage. We got it all out here today right now. I'm about a 2,000-hour Phantom pilot. I started flying the airplane in about 1976, and these guys back then were the guys I wanted to be. These were the guys who had 5 MiG kills, 3 in one mission, and that's what I trained. I trained to be the best guy I could be in the airplane. And listening, reading their stories, Duke's got a book called Fox 2. I also read the, how about And Kill MiGs? I remember I read that book, And Kill MiGs. I think it was a Lou Drendel book. I went through every engagement that they went through. And I could probably repeat them today. But that's the story. And yeah, the way we're going to run things today, we're on a tight schedule. We got to be out of here by 11 o'clock. And what we're going to do is talk a little bit about the airplane and the crew concept and the weapon system. Then we're going to get into their story. And it's probably not going to have a lot of time. I'll probably say, hey, let's talk about that last story where you got 3 MiGs and got shot down. And then we'll open it up to Randy for a quick second. And I thank you, Randy, for having the airplane here. The original concept, of course, was to have what? An F-4. If we could have an F-4J here, that would have been great. You know, that's what these guys used to kill that airplane. Connie and I talked about it. We said, hey, you know what? What else can we do? And, you know, they're Navy guys, so we said, okay, it was going to be an A4 over there, and Duke had A4 time when he was flying Top Gun, and Willie, of course, is a high time. How many hours in the F-14? You said?
2,200.
22 hours of Tomcat time. And we couldn't get that, so we sat there and we said, okay, so we'll have a little Navy representation here. But then I said, hey, Connie, they shot down 4 MiG-17s. We got any MiGs around? And she goes, well, as a matter of fact, we do. And Randy jumped in there and said, yes, indeed. I'm proud to be here. And he's, by the way, he's a demo pilot. He's a high-time MiG pilot in the world, I think. But you've probably watched him fly at night. He's going to be flying again this afternoon. And it's a beautiful, beautiful airplane. We'll do a quick walk around at the very end, and we'll open up to questions. But that's kind of what we're going to start the program. And I'll say now, the Phantom. You know, most of you guys, it's an outdated airplane now. Like I said, I had a couple thousand hours in the thing, but it is a crew-served weapon system, and you got to understand that it's not just one guy. Yeah, you know, the F-16, the F-22, they're now single seat, but no, back then it was a crew-served weapon system. So you had the guy in the front and the guy in the back. The guy in the front, obviously the pilot. The guy in the back, hey, you know what they called in the Navy? They called them Rios. We called them Wizzos. We called them the Gibbs, guys in the back. A lot of different terms, but each one had a particular job, and I'm going to open it up with Willie and just say, okay, you know, hey, here you are at war. Hey, you're dropping bombs one day, you're killing MiGs another day. You know, what was his job in the back seat? What did he do? So, Willie, I'll open it up to you.
Yes, sir. First off, thanks for having us, and thank you all for being here today. My job was several different things. First off, to run the radar to find out where the enemy threats were coming from. Let Randy know what was happening and be able to help him once the dogfight started. Secondly, to run the electronic countermeasures equipment, you know, to pre-flight it, make sure it was working correctly so we could know who was looking at us and where the shots, the enemy shots were coming from. The third job was to run the electronic countermeasure equipment to make sure we were responding appropriately to the electronic threats that were tracking us. And the fourth job was to, and these were all, job four could all of a sudden become job one at a very quick timeline there. And the fourth job was to help with the navigation. In other words, many times out of these fights, he'd say, Willie, give me a heading out of here. And I would give him the heading, making sure we were avoiding the surface to air missile sites. And we flew 170 combat missions together. The way the Navy did it was you flew with the same pilot for all of your missions. If one of us had the duty, the other guy normally wouldn't fly that day. Or you might fly sometimes with another person, but that was rare. And I've been asked many times, so how did you and Duke Cunningham get along so well for all that time and what you did in combat? And I tried to keep three simple rules in mind. Number one, if something bad happened, I did it. If something good happened, we did it. If something great happened, he did it.
I love it. I love it. All right, so Duke, what was your job up front? What, you know, you did that pilot stuff, as they said in Top Gun there.
You just had to know what your enemy was. This airplane right here, it looks better on fire. Sorry, Randy.
That's all right.
But you train to know what the enemy has so that you can do it. Area 51, we were gifted to be able to fly against MiG-17s and MiG-21s. So we had a pretty good idea on what to do. We looked at we had the radar that Willie ran, and Willie is the best backseater in the entire Navy. And I was very fortunate to have Willie. I picked Willie. My second tour, I could pick the RO I wanted. And Willie had a Volkswagen with a beer keg in the back of it. And I said, that's the guy that I want. And Willie and I are like brothers, welded at the hip. But we worked as a team. And the very first time that first flights, you know, I was pretty hard on Willie. Do this, do that, do this. And after a while, he started going, Duke, do this, do this. And I said, he's arrived. And that's when you become a team. I would do things. I know just like Willie, we had a MiG-17 come in behind us like this, and Willie came up and said, Duke, do this pilot you know how to do before the wing coming. And I knew what he was, you know, to do. He knew where the threat was, and I could believe it. But I also know that somebody behind me, he was going to get it. The skills, I was very fortunate, the commanding officers that we had let us fly against dissimilar airplanes. We were in a Phantom, and the Air Force, a lot of times during that period, they could only fly F-4 against F-4. And when they got tangled with a tight-turning MiG-21 or 17 or 19, it was hard for them, and we were able to do that, and I was able to go through from anything that had wings on it. Our commanding officer let us fly against it just to see the maneuverability that we could use to fight it. So I was very, very fortunate. I went through Top Gun as a student ahead of time as an instructor and then commanding officer of the 126. And all of those times, you just love flying this thing. And I'm sure Randy will tell you. That's a noisy sucker.
Yeah, it is.
But I don't know. I just feel so gifted. And for you veterans, and especially for the wives out there, the wives of a veteran, you've got it really tough when your bros are going over there. And so God bless you.
Duke, I got to ask, you know, some more of the pilot stuff that you did up front. You know, you're the guy pulling the trigger. You're the guy launching the missiles.
Yes.
And most of your kills, from what I understand, were sidewinders.
All five of them.
I was going to say, I got to ask a question. Here's Willie in the back, you know, with a radar. And the only other weapon system these guys had back then was the Sparrow missile. And I guess they recognized pretty early on that the Sparrow was very unreliable. But to do it, of course, Willie was a guy who had to sit there and lock on. He had to get the dot in the AC circle and all that kind of stuff back there. But did you kind of push that aside and just say, hey, you know, it's so unreliable that it's not worth shooting at these guys, and you end up just shooting sidewinders at them? Is that essentially what happened?
The Sparrow kill probability only was 7%, and the sidewinder was 49%, so I knew if I got in firing range, I was going to use sidewinder. I saw a picture with the Air Force shooting three Sparrows at one airplane, and the first one hit it. So those statistics are, you know, a little foolish and things like that. But we banged off the Sparrow on an aircraft carrier where the Air Force could, you know, land on a nice, smooth, long runway, have a nice dinner at night.
I did, yeah. Okay, yeah. Yep. So I got to also ask, a typical loadout on the mission that you guys shot down three, was that a strike mission that you were going on? And your load at that point, were you carrying bombs and probably, what, four sidewinders and a couple Sparrows? What was the load on that one?
I believe the load was four sidewinder, two Sparrow, and four Rockeye.
Okay.
And our mission was we're going to an enemy railroad shipment yard called the Hydrong Railroad Yard. And we were actually flying as flak suppressors. And when we rolled in, you know, getting to the target area was very uneasily quiet. There was no threat weapons being fired at us, which is unusual. We thought initially we were sneaking up on them, but I said, I don't think so. There's 25 Navy airplanes going in 45 miles into enemy territory. So right when we got to the target area, it opened up. Remember when Harry Blackburn and Steve Redluff got hit? And a lot of anti-aircraft, we actually decided at that point to unload our ordnance on where the threats were coming from. As I recall, our bombing run was a lot steeper than necessary, which I was okay with, by the way. And it was a lot faster, but we got rid of our Rockeye, and they're a weapon they're like a bunch of miniature hand grenades that scatter over a particular area, so it's a good anti-suppressant against anti-aircraft type threats from the ground. And I remember as we were looking over our shoulder at where the bombs are going, that's when we first picked up the enemy airplanes, and the fighting started from there.
Okay. And
a tur is a bomb rack. You're able to hold three 500-pound bombs on it. And what hampered us this day was we had just dropped Rockeye on a Hydrong Railroad Yard. And the problem was those turs, the drag on it was tremendous. And if I got rid of the turs, I got rid of my sidewinders. I couldn't get them separated. So when I went vertical, instead of going here, I would go up to this high and not have the separation that I needed, and that hampered us. But it was kind of tough on that thing. But the MiG-17, he turns at 19 degrees a second. We only turn at 12 degrees a second. So if I get behind him and he turns, he can out turn us. So we use the vertical. But when you're taking away that vertical, it's a pretty tough fight.
Were you guys carrying fuel tanks too? You carry a centerline fuel tank, probably 600 gallon. Is that
I
right?
I got rid of the centerline as soon as I saw that my Brian Grant was my wingman. He said, Duke, MiG-17. Soon as I turned like this, I went bang. I had trained, even in my car, there's three switches, labs, ready, direct, pickle. Labs, ready, direct enable us to get rid of the center line, and all I had to do was boom. And when he said MiG-17, I turned and I got rid of the center line because they were already coming down and firing.
Yeah, okay. How about early warning? Did you have any, any kind of warning that the MiGs were there, other than your wingman saying, "Hey, the MiGs are there"? You know, we had some early warning stuff out there, so we probably knew that the MiGs had taken off, right? But did you have any heads up that the MiGs were getting close to you guys?
You know, they call that real-time information, and we had a very good intelligence network monitoring what was going on from the enemy side. But we always had heavy debates with the intelligence community. Most of the time, they did not pass that information along to us. Now, we were controlled by a Navy ship called Red Crown. What was that call sign? They were about 150 miles away from us. So when we get down a low altitude, we'd sometimes lose radio transmission with them. And I remember when we came off that bombing run, we dropped the four rock guy, we were jinking back and forth, and I saw two black specks on the horizon. I thought they were Air Force airplanes, so didn't pay much attention to them, continued to scan across the ground, and then the black specks turned to be several MiG-17s coming up the left side. I called them out to Randy that we had bandits closing on the left. He initially said, "No joy, keep talking." I said, "Break left, they're approaching guns." And then he said, "Got them."
Were they shooting at you then?
No, they weren't. They were, and to this day, you might have a better feel for this than I do, wild man, but I don't know if they saw us, but they flew right out in front of us.
Okay.
You see this big gun right here?
That's
a 37-millimeter gun. That thing, when it's shooting at you, puts out a fire like this. It looks like he can kill you just with his flame. The other ones are 23-millimeter, but that 37 goes boom, 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 and the 23 goes, lights up like that. That is an eye catcher.
Okay, so the first MiG that you saw and killed was a single shot sidewinder kill. Is that right? You said he didn't see you?
Well, we came off target, and I'm coming like this. Brian says, "Duke, MiG 17, 7 o'clock. Another mistake I made, I said, "Willie, look at that. Look at the target we just bombed," because it was just obliterated, and that's when Brian said MiG 7 o'clock. As I reversed like this, these guys were coming down, and I knew that he had a big limitation. He does not have hydraulically boosted controls, and a MiG driver, a big gomer, trying to pull that airplane, it's hard for him. He had a lot of speed and his nose down, and 2 days prior to that, I had a MiG coming in on me like this, and I put 12 Gs on the airplane. I broke both hinges. The airplane was down for 2 months, and we pulled it, but then he rendezvoused on me because he can outturn me, and I had to go into the clouds to get rid of him. But with this one, he had the speed. He had nose down. I broke into him like this. He, just soon as he overshot, I reversed. He came out the other side. And because I had labs ready direct arm, the only thing I had to do was pull the trigger. We had one of the guys in our squadron got behind a MiG-17, and he forgot to go to arm. Now, I ask you, with a MiG this quick coming by, do you think I had time to throw four switches, reset the gun sight to 35 mils? No. But I did that on every mission that I bombed. I came up and went labs, ready, direct, and set 35 mils. So when that MiG passed there, I was ready.
That's muscle memory, and that's what it takes, again, because of the speed, as you said. And in the meantime now, so you're killing this guy. Willie, are you keeping track of the second guy? There's another guy out there now. Could you see him?
Well, right after the first splash, looked over the left side and looked like the Battle of Britain. The sky was full of enemy airplanes. So at that point, we weren't sure what was going on. I mean, I know Randy was thinking about the advantage of our airplane with the power. So the we were taught by Top Gun that the term is drag the fight uphill. So we pulled up into the vertical and saw just a huge fight down the left side, you know, a lot of chatter on the radios, missiles, this kind of thing. And then we saw a Navy airplane, weren't sure who it was, and then two MiGs behind about a half mile, and a third MiG coming up, looked like he was coming up to join on his wing. What he was actually doing was trying to get a sweeten up the shot. We're setting up here, so why don't you take it from there, Wildman? We're up here, we see that's Dwight Tim and Jim Fox.
So there's three down here, and you guys are up high?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Have Randy tell you about the roll rate and the pull on that airplane.
Yeah, the airplane pitches very well, and it turns great once you've got it rolled, but once you've got it up at speed, 350, 400 knots or faster. Roll rate is pretty poor, and that portion is hydraulically boosted, but it's not enough, and it needs roll spoilers, et cetera, to fix it. You push on the stick as hard as you can, and I've had people say, "What, that was such a graceful roll you made," and inside the cockpit, I'm doing this over here,
doing all you can.
Roll, so,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So Duke, you're up here. There's three down here chasing one of your buddies, and now did you just pick, you know, hey, the guy who's closest to your buddy? I mean,
well, they had some of these MiGs in a circle. They call it a wagon wheel. They're flying in a circle, and if you get behind them, there's always a MiG behind you. That was their tactic. It's a screwed up tactic, but they're doing it. And as these MiGs were coming around, one of our Phantoms, our XO, executive officer, was in a turn like this, and he had a MiG coming in. So I started down at him, and I was waiting for him to turn in front of me, and another F-4 came, and if he had added another coat of paint on the airplane, we would have taken it off because I only missed it. So I had to go back through that thing and come down, and again, that when the airplane came around a thing like this, it was easy because I just waited for him to turn his tail and squeeze and blew him up off my XO's tail.
Yeah, and the AIM-9s that you were shooting, the Sidewinders back then, you really had to be pretty close to the tail of the airplane. The Sidewinders now, you know, you've got the front aspect.
Yeah.
They got cooled seeker heads and all that kind of stuff. You guys didn't have that ability. You had to be back there probably within 30 degrees or so, get a good tone, and then...
Yeah, well, Dwight Tim, my XO, he had a MiG-17 here and a MiG-21 here. And I wanted to shoot the MiG-21, but the 17 was the one that was going to hurt my XO.
Yeah.
So I ended up shooting the MiG-17. His name was Nguyen Van Thu. Nguyen Van Thu, I was drinking scotch with him in Hanoi just a couple years ago. And he said, "Duke, thanks for not picking me, the MiG-21 driver." Another MiG driver came in, and he's the one that when he came around a turn like this, he said, I asked him, "How come you didn't shoot at me?" And that's when he said, "Duke, I ran out of bullets."
So. Wow. All right, so that's number two. Now there's one more, and this one sounds like you were on your way home when you found this guy, or trying to get feet wet, basically, right?
Made a big mistake. When I was fighting a Top Gun instructor or something, I would try and pass him close aboard, because if you're here, he uses that level of separation to turn on me and gain it. And I used to get it down from my instructor, but I said, you know, I got turned on him, so what? So I told Willie, I said, "Willie, watch this. I'm going to scare the sugar." That's not the word I use. I'm going to scare the sugar out of this guy. And I pointed my nose right at him. In training, I never had somebody shoot at me for real in a gun. And his guns lit up, and I went, "Criminy, he's got a gun in his nose." And so when I broke into the vertical like this, expecting him, because most of the MiGs, if they didn't have an advantage, they would run, and Hanoi was that way. So when I came up like this in the vertical, I looked back, and here was a MiG-17 going vertical. Whoa. And I could see a little Gomer scarf, a little Gomer goggles, and we're going canopy to canopy.
So vertical rolling scissors is basically
and
what
rolling,
you got into.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what it turned into, be a rolling scissors.
Okay, and so now you're going up the hill. Eventually that's going to stop, and you're going to point down. And this guy you ended up shooting?
Well, I was really good at flying the Phantom slow, and I trained against it. And so when I got up here, I made another mistake. I gave him a predictable fight. So he shot ahead of me here, and so I rolled and pulled down and unloaded the airplane and got speed, and he came down after me like this. So I said, "Okay, I'll put this guy in a rolling scissors." So I put about 5-6 G's on this, and he overshot, and he came down like this. And I remember thinking, "Okay, you rat, you're dead." So I pulled the airplane like this, and I rolled it and twisted it like this, and I got my nose on him like that, And he broke and put and forced me to overshoot. That's called a rolling scissors. And I said, this guy knows what he's doing.
But you ended up getting him in the long run?
In the movie Top Gun, you saw where the guy came back to idle, put his speed brakes out, and the MiG overshot him. That's what I did. As he got in coming like this, and I had gone through that twice and disengaged from him, and this time I saw his nose come up, so I put the idle speed brakes, went half flaps, and he went whoop out in front of me. And now I'm sitting behind him. Another mistake is that the Sidewinder, I have to have 1,000 feet to be able for the missile to arm. I'm about 500 feet away from this guy, nose to tail, and I know he can outturn me. So I just started to drop the wing to disengage, and he did this like this, and he departed his airplane. And the airplane went down like this, and I said, well, if he's going to run, I'm not going to run. And I rolled, and I pulled the speed brakes again, and I got a tail nose-to-tail separation and got the Sidewinder tone, squeezed the trigger, and that was it.
All right, so that was number three. Okay, now it's time to go home. And you guys tried to go home, but some telephone pole ended up impacting your airplane. What happened, Willie?
Well, you know, after that fight, we're pretty excited. So we're talking back and forth.
You're an ace at that point.
We're just thinking we got through a really tough fight. As Randy described the way it started, what he didn't say was he used the word sugar. But when the when the MiG passed close aboard, he said, "Oh." That's the last thing a guy in the back seat wants to hear. You're thinking, did the stick just fall off? You know. But anyway, the rest of the story he told. But we're pretty happy after that fight. It was a pretty fierce fight. As we're heading out and climbing, I'll never forget this. You said, give me a heading, 040. We're climbing to 28,500, 0.68 Mach climb. Going to do an idle descent to the ship, hopefully to get to a tanker. But we're talking back and forth. We're not listening to the radios. I'm not looking at the radar. We're not looking at the electronic countermeasure equipment. We're just happy. All of a sudden, we hear this loud explosion. The plane bounces a little bit. I look out over the left side or the right side, and I see an orange fire, like an orange smoke. And the plane continued to fly okay, but I said, that was a SAM. And we better get ourselves back together here. So all of a sudden, we're back in the plane in the moment. The plane continued to fly normally for about the next minute and a half or so. Everything seemed to be okay. I looked over my left side just to make sure there were no bandits that were chasing us. There had been two enemy airplanes holding low overhead the treetops. I kept thinking, I wonder why they're letting us escape. I thought it was foolish on their part at the time. I later understood that they were bringing the surface-to-air threat up, and they told these bandits to loiter overhead the treetops. The bandits are now rapidly climbing toward our position. As I looked over the left side, I noticed the turtleback area where the fuel tanks are, there was a little bit of fire on the side of the airplane. I reported that to Randy. I called him Wild Man in the airplane. He always knew when it was me talking when I said, Wild Man. I said, Wild Man, we got a little bit of fire going on the left side. He said,
Willie said, Duke, we're on fire.
And he told me that I think first off we're losing PC2. And the plane started to fly on its own sideways.
That's a hydraulic system.
One of the hydraulic systems. There's three. The hydraulic system one we call PC1, hydraulic system two, and then the utility hydraulic system, which powered a lot of the flight controls on the airplane. So we're starting to lose the hydraulic control. The plane is starting to fly sideways. Now it's a question where, and I think we got hit, we're probably 25 or so miles inside enemy territory. So now it's a question of whether we're going to get the airplane out to the coast or not. You know, Randy and I talk every year on the 10th of May, the day this occurred. And I always ask him each year, what was the highlight of that day? And we talk back and forth as two guys that went through that would talk. And I always say, you know, Wild Man, I think the best flying you ever did was after we got hit. And he said, you know, Willie, I hate to tell you this, I wasn't flying the plane. But he somehow managed to get the plane up over to the coast. The plane went into heavy wing rock back and forth, flipped on its back, and we went into an inverted spin. Now, one of my jobs in a
situation. How high were you then?
We're probably about 12,500.
Okay, so you got.
We got hit at maybe 25, 26,000, something like that. So we're upside down right at the coast. Now, we have this thing. You probably haven't seen this in a while. We have this thing called an ejection handle that sits between each of our legs. And there's also an ejection light that, that he might push if we needed to eject. But I knew this situation was extremis. So we're in this inverted spin. I'm squished against the top of the canopy. And it's there's a little bit of fire inside on the left-hand side. You know, the F4 in the back seat has all these circuit breakers.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking this we have to get out of this airplane now. So they teach us, I'll stand up so you can see, they teach us to grab the handle and hold with your wrist. It's about a 30-pound pull toward your chin. It's a crisp pull. But I'm squished against the top of the canopy, and this is about the best I can do. And we're spinning, and I know if it's uncomfortable for me, it's really uncomfortable for him in the front seat. So I do a one-arm handstand with my left hand. Although they teach us this, I get the top of my two knuckles on the top of the handle. I figure that's probably the best I can do. I can still hear the instructor saying, feet flat on the deck, arms in, eyes above the horizon. And I said, if I try to sweeten this grip, I might lose the grip. So with this, I yank it. Bam, it fires. Off we go. The next thing I know, I look up and see the orange and white parachute, and we're coming down on the mouth of the enemy's harbor. What the enemy does is they send out PT boats in our direction. You know, so we it wasn't time to relax right now. There's PT boats coming toward us. Randy and I were about a half mile apart. We could wave to each other in our parachutes coming down and give the international signal that I'm okay. You know, as we came down, now I joined the Navy not knowing how to swim. I think you were.
Yeah, it's a swimming hole that you're going through training.
You were a swimming instructor, University of Missouri, if I recall. So anyway, I had a hard time, but when I learned how to relax in the water, everything worked out okay. But for a guy like me to say water entry was uneventful, please consider the source. So got out of the chute, got into my raft, broadcast our position. I was Showtime 100 Bravo. The enemy PT boats were called Skunks. And the Haiphong Harbor where we ejected, that was called Point 66. So I said, Showtime 100 Bravo, two Skunks vectoring our position at Point 66. They said, Roger, come up, beeper, 2828. We did that, was in the water maybe 20 minutes, and then we were rescued. I've been asked many times what it was like to be coming down in the parachute after shooting down the three MiGs, jumping out of a flaming jet with enemy PT boats coming to get us. What was going through my mind at that particular moment? My answer very simply was, perhaps I made an incorrect decision in leaving the Army Reserves back in Boston.
Let me tell you a real story. When the airplane started waving itself after we got hit, it rolled, and I told Willie we were losing hydraulics, and the airplane went upside down like this. And I remember thinking, I don't want to be a prisoner of war, and I don't want to die. God, get me out of this. And I kicked the left rudder like this, and I got it to roll and go like this. And I remember I could see the Gulf of Tonkin and got it going straight, and I went to burner to try and get there as fast as I could. And I remember thinking, God didn't have anything to do with this. It was just my flying skills that did this. But the airplane went back upside down, and I said, God, I didn't mean it. Get my butt out of here. True story.
Wow.
Now, Willie, I'd always briefed Willie that if we ever had to go out of the airplane, because some other pilots, just some, their pilots said eject for some reason, and they punched out, I would say, Willie, eject, 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 and we go out on the third one. I only got out Willie E, and bang, we were gone.
Well done, Willie, well done. That's all I can say.
The last part of that story, you know, what you're supposed to do if you get rescued is you're supposed to take the air crew out to dinner and buy them drinks, anything they want. They didn't know what to do with us the next day. We were on board the Constellation. I had the duty that morning, and then we were flown to Saigon and then back to the States, and we toured around the country for the next 10 months making presentations to different groups. So I always felt bad that I never got to thank the air crew that came out and rescued us. About 8 or 9 years ago, I got a call from a fellow that said, Willie, I'm the commanding officer of that helicopter squadron, HC-7, that rescued you guys. We're having a reunion in Las Vegas. Can you come as our guest speaker? I said, absolutely. So I came to the hotel in Las Vegas. They were all there, about 150 of them with their families in this big conference room. I walked up to the podium and said, here's my credit card. I'm about 35 years late. do with it what you want. And they did.
All right, I could listen to stories like this for the next 3 hours, I think. But I did tell Randy that I was going to let him talk a little bit about his airplane. We already know the best-looking MiG is one with smoke coming out the back of it, right?
On fire.
Yeah, on fire. But, Randy, I'm going to ask you real quick, hey, talk to the people a little bit about your airplane, how it flies, the armament, et cetera, and then we're going to open it up to questions after that.
Sure.
Thanks for being here, by the way.
Oh, you guys are more like, this is a great honor for me. This is I'm having a blast. This is awesome. What you have is a Russian design MiG-17F. F is a designation for the first version with an afterburner. One of the things that made the missiles that these guys were shooting more successful.
And these guys, they didn't have afterburners back there that you were shooting at, or did they?
No, yeah.
They did.
Yeah,
okay,
the F model did. was the one that they splashed. So the aircraft doesn't have hydraulics in the pitch. It does have it in a roll. But the wing design, some of you guys that are sitting more along the wing, you can tell it has a 48 degrees wing sweep to the second fence and only about a 38 degree from there to the wing tip, I believe. Also, it's two different airfoils. It has a much sharper wing in the innerboard and a lot more camber on the outside. And that camber, when you get the jet up at a high high velocity knots or Mach, causes the airflow to get over the top of that wing very accelerated, causing a high pressure on top of that aileron and making it very difficult for the pilot to roll the jet. They modified the hydraulic system on the flight controls twice, if I read right, that increased the pressure and the leverage on that. But it's still the design doesn't have a slat like the Phantom does. It doesn't have a roll spoiler like a modern fighter does. So if you get the airplane really hauling the mail, it doesn't want to roll well. It turns fantastic. It'll out-turn anything until the F-16 flew in 74 once you get it over on a bank. So the reason why we wanted to always fight it in the vertical and not in the horizontal, don't get into a turning fight with the jet.
How about G's? How many G's could you pull with that thing?
We're limited here because we don't have a Cat 1 box for the show this year, but at air show, although I'll fly that maneuver this afternoon, I enter the maneuver at about 320 knots NAB, and it goes straight to 8 G's, and I do an 8 G horizontal turn. Demonstrate the turning capability of the aircraft, and the aircraft will do that complete turn in a 4,000-foot runway. You can do it if you want to really, hurt yourself. And then from that maneuver at a typical air show, go right out of that maneuver into a half Cuban. So the idea is that fighter pilots would understand, G the jet up a lot and put a lot of induced drag on it, and then go from that right into a vertical maneuver. So it makes for a great air show jet like that. Well, we're really happy to bring this aircraft, particular one, because it has all its guns on it.
Yeah.
And so that these two commanders and American heroes can point at the guns, and you guys can see what they fought against for real.
And that was the standard configuration for back when they were fighting it back there, the 37 and the 23.
Correct. They eventually grew or added on missiles to the aircraft towards the very end, but I don't know that any of them ever made it into combat. I've seen the photos and so forth. And then the aircraft later on would carry ATOL missiles on them as well.
They were shooting ATOLs at you guys too, right? They had ATOLs when you guys were fighting them too, right?
I'm sorry?
Did they have ATOL missiles?
They had ATOLs.
Yep, okay.
Yeah. So most of them didn't. They had just the 23 and the 37.
Okay,
correct.
But it got your attention too.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I said I was going to give us 10 minutes. I'm going to give us 10 minutes for questions now.
Let me ask you, Ted, we've got over in the EA tent, we're going to be Willie and I are going to be selling our books, so I got to put my kids through college. So you can come over.
And I think afterwards you're going to be back in the merchandise building back here, signing books. Also, his book is Fox 2, and Willie, you're going to be back there too with your book. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
They're only $20. Great Christmas present.
Great stories. And like I said, we've only, hit the tip of the iceberg here. He talks about all the other MiG kills and everything else that went on. And it is, like I say, I've read it forever. So, okay, questions. Let's go. We got 10 minutes worth of questions.
Yeah, I'm just curious as to, has any one of you flown both a F-4 and a MiG-17 or a 21? And how do they compare as far as flying characteristics?
Got any MiG time? Have you ever been in a MiG 21 or a MiG
17? In Area 51, which gave me a good opportunity to see what the airplane would do. The MiG 21, I flew against it just like I got to fly against the F-22 and the F-15 and F-16. It gives you a real sense of what your enemy can do.
How about, Willie, in the Tomcat, did you get a chance? They had a program, and it's declassified now, called Red Eagle, the Red Eagle Squadron. But we had exploited some of the Soviet airplanes way back when. And I was fortunate to participate in that. And I flew an F-4 against a MiG-23. And I don't know, Willie, did you get a chance to fly against any of the Soviet fighters in the Tomcat?
What happened was I've been out of the Navy about 7 or 8 years. I was in the reserves, and we got invited up. There's a place that the Air Force has called Area 51. Which at the time was a very secret base about 65, 70 miles northeast of Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada. And the invitation said, it's going to be you and Duke Cunningham in an F-4. I said, great. We're going to God, my old buddy, we're going to be back together in an F-4. And you're going to be going up to Nellis, and you're going to fly against MiG-17s and MiG-21s at this special place. You're not going to be able to land there, but... you're going to get two flights in the morning against MiG-17s and two flights in the afternoon against MiG-21s. Remember, Keith Sheehan was flying the MiG-17 and Chuck Heatley was flying the MiG-21. And we got ourselves in the exact same situation, and he was behind us, the MiG-17 flown by a former Top Gun instructor named Keith Sheehan, call sign Sheik. And you did the same thing, the idle speed brakes. He flew out in front. He said, I should have known better. But, it didn't end well for him. We were in a vertical fight that afternoon against a MiG-21. And strangely enough, we lost sight of him. Remember, he was back at our deep six right on the deck. And we're up at the top going in a vertical fight. When we picked him up again, we were in huge trouble. So we did the best we could trying to hold him off. But my experience was it was a thrill to be back with Randy in an F-4 going against real MiGs. But it was absolutely probably the best flight I've ever had in a fighter plane, because we were over the United States in American airspace, airplanes flown by U.S. Top Gun pilots, and there were not any missiles or bullets being launched at us. It was just a fun day of flying. It was really a thrill. We had five flights that day against them. It was special.
Outstanding.
And for Randy on the MiG-17, sourcing parts for your aircraft. How are you handling ejection seat parts, or what do you do to keep the airplane going with regards to the ejection seat?
Well, it is a true labor of love, I guess you could say. We've been doing it for, I've been around warbirds since I was a kid, so it's my entire adult life. We have a significant parts inventory in Tyler, Texas, where we keep the aircraft when they're not on the air show circuit. I have some great people that work for us. Over on the side there, Aaron Kelly in the red, Navy AT on Hornets for a number of years. Next to her is, we call him Dad. Bill is his name, but we call him Dad. He was F-100 engine guy in Vietnam. His daughter, Dr. Elkins, and Bill Coberson beside her. We have a pretty good parts inventory. This airplane has an engine in it right now that's got about 21 or 2 hours on it total time. That was the winter project was put a new engine in it. So all of that stuff
Air Force?
Yeah, we got some Air
Force out
there. You
know what you put on the bottom of a Coke bottle at an Air Force base? Open other end?
Yeah.
Duke.
Anyway, I hope
Duke.
That helps.
Oh, here we go. I was just waiting how long. It took about 53 minutes to get there, but I knew it was coming, you know. All right, up there with a MiG pilot.
One, two. Yes, okay. Thank you. Before I ask a question, I'd like to say very thank you very much, Randy, who keep history for Soviet history. Because now in Russia, no plane, no MiG-17 alive. Thank you very much, Randy.
What do you say? Welcome.
And questions, please. When you hit MiG-17, what the pilot inside in the cabin, Korean, Chinese, or Russian, or Soviet military pilot?
What did he say?
I'm sorry.
You wondered what kind of pilots you thought were flying, Chinese, Russian, or Vietnamese?
Oh, they were Vietnamese. And matter of fact, I went back to Vietnam. A family of one of the pilots that Willie and I shot down didn't survive. And the family asked us if we would have lunch with them. And I got a little bit hesitant. But we had a two-hour lunch and sat with them. At the end of the 2 hours, they came up to me and hugged me and said, Lieutenant Cunningham, You are now our new brother. I don't know about you, but I cried like a baby. It was very difficult.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, we've got one right there with the plaid shorts on. Go ahead.
Hi. The F-4 did not have an internal gun, which I guess as Vietnam carried on I guess it was
the E model did, by the way.
The E model, which was an Air Force model, but there the Navy, if I recall, the Navy models never carried an internal gun. Would that have made much of a difference for you? Would the gun have been much different, or you know? I mean, I know it was.
I know where you're going. What he's saying is that you know the airplane was originally designed to use missiles to shoot the other airplanes way out there, and not to get into dogfights. And yeah, they didn't give you a gun. They later modified the airplane. They put the gun on the F-4E, okay? But they also had gun pods that they could mount on your airplanes. And I thought I remember reading somewhere where you said, hey, if I had a gun, I could have probably killed another couple MiGs. And any reason that they didn't use the gun pods and you didn't carry them?
You know, for the Navy, we were always weight sensitive coming on and off carriers. And, you know, my sense with all that I saw, I was always... It would have been nice to have had a gun because a couple of raking gun kills perhaps would have occurred. But the amount of time, knowing how you are, wild man, the amount of time to make sure we had a good shot, most of the time when Randy was shooting one of the planes, there were two to three back behind us shooting at us. And it was a judgment call on my part when I was going to call him to break and when. And sometimes when he wanted to go up to the right, I had to call him to make a belly check to the left. Maybe, I don't know, two or three times we did it. We went right from the belly check into some kind of a last-ditch maneuver to negate the shot. So it was we had our hands full with what we had. I'm afraid we maybe have gotten one, maybe even two more kills, but I'm not sure we'd be here today if we had a gun.
Okay.
I'm alive today because of this guy.
Yeah. Well, I honestly think it's interesting that, you know, that was, hey, they decided back then that, hey, initially, we wanted to shoot long range and kill the guys way out there. Yeah. Then they said, finally, hey, no, if you have to dogfight, let's put a gun on board. And now we're going the other way. We're back at the F-22, and what do they want to do? They want to kill the guys when they're 30 miles away. But they still got a gun. That's the good news. So they realize, and I'm not sure I'd ever want to try to fight an F-22 with a gun. You guys are legitimate aces, and I thank you so much for your words, your expertise.